Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, day 25 of the UAW strike against GM. And good day. Interesting little thing today. Danny DeVito, the actor, actually tweeted out support for the UAW members today, which I thought was a great thing. I love Danny DeVito, great actor. But, you know, at this moment, to jump out and say, hey, we should be supporting them, I think really important. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on what's going on, not just here in the U.S., but also in Canada. I've asked Frank Hammer to come back and give us an update. He's a retired UAW member, also former UAW local president. Frank, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you very much for having me, and thanks for your interest.
So, I'm looking at this, and, fortunately, it's still, after this long of a period of time, because, Americans have very short attention spans, still something people are, I think, interested in.
Oh, I think that, certainly, I'm being in the center of the, the auto industry, Motown, Motor City. The interest is really, really high here, and I hear that's true for other parts of the country. I think that the auto strike, being that it's taken on a major employer, and given that it's taking so long, and given that there's been such a visible presence on the picket lines, I think that it really has roused the interest. And I got to tell you, it continues to be on corporate media, and they still continue to give the reports about the strike. So, yeah, I think there's a strong regional and national interest.
No, I think the reason is, for so long, we've been tightening the belt, sacrificing, the guise of, I'm just happy to have a job, even if we can't afford to keep paying the bills. I think this is one of those moments where everyone's kind of watching, holding their breath a little bit, because this could be one of those, and I know we say this a lot, but could be like a turning point where people start going, hey, corporate CEOs are making millions of dollars, corporate profits through the roof. You got Trump running around saying this is the best economy ever, but working people are still struggling. So I'm looking at this as maybe one of those moments where people are going, hey, this could be that moment where that turning point where people start going, hey, I want a little bit too.
I think that the GM strikers and people on the picket line are expressing the wish of and the desires and the frustrations of millions of workers. What we have in our plants is replicated in working places, union and non-union, across the country. And, we're seeing this growing disparity between, the wealthy class, the 1%, and then the 99%, and auto workers in particular, are looking at why is GM making $35 billion over the last 3 years, and we're continuing to get the short end of the stick. So I think that's an expression of a sentiment that's broadly across the U.S., and I think that for all that very reason, I think that people's attentions are riveted on what will be the course of the strike and its outcome.
Yeah, because depending on what the outcome is, this could be one of those moments, or one of those rallying cry moments of, hey, these workers stood together, stood in solidarity, and fought for better wages, hours, conditions, and also, the idea that someone else matters. Because the one theme of this strike that I think is most important is it's not just about the individual, it's about everybody, and the fact that they want to do away with, as one person told me, the five-tier wage structure that you guys have there at GM.
So this is one of several key points in this battle between GM workers and GM, and it is over what you described, the five-tier wage structure in the plants. So, for example, in the Canadian, and I was telling you a little earlier off camera that, or off audio, that the Oshawa plant was one of the five. Oshawa in Canada was one of the five plants that was announced to be closed. So I went up there with another rank and file brother that was on the line, that's on the picket line in Flint. And we talked to the Canadians, and they describe the many companies. There's 5, 6, 7 companies that are all on location in the GM plant, all governed by different agreements, all governed by different expiration dates of their agreements, all receiving different kinds of benefits and so on. And it's a level of frustration and with a disparity of treatment of workers that are essentially doing the same work that's driving the struggle. And what I found interesting in interactions that I've had with auto workers or hearing from them is that the legacy employees, the tier one, that they themselves are also demanding for example, what they call the permanent temps, that's one of your five tiers, that the permanent temporary workers be made permanent. And I think that's a real good reach by the legacy workers reaching out to the lower tiered workers.
Well, I mean, it's one of those moments where you go, you know, are you an employee or aren't you? And creating those divisions. And I argued when it happened that they should have never allowed that to happen from the beginning, because it's just going to be one of those moments that tears you apart. And oddly enough, you know, looking at what you were talking about at the Oshawa plant, having, you know, multiple contracts, multiple companies under the same roof, that's how the employer class and how the wealthy have always pitted people against each other, creating those divisions, you know, not just on, you know, are you white or black, male or female, whatever, but, you know, based on what's subdivision within the company that you work for. I mean, it's classic divide and conquer.
Yeah, and I think it's really important what you just said, because we know that if the divisions were done by the corporations and by GM based on race, that we have laws that would challenge that. We have a contractual agreement that would challenge that. The same based on sex, that we have laws and we have contracts that challenge that. So the companies have found a way to get around these obvious forms of discrimination and found a new way of discrimination for which no laws are written and for which no contractual agreements stop and prevent. And I think that this is what the challenge is. How do we allow them to get away with this discrimination, which is discrimination, but it's not based on the forms of discrimination that the corporations exercised, certainly in the past, regard, you know, sexual discrimination or racial discrimination, ethnic discrimination, et cetera.
Yeah, and they can no longer divide us on those terms. So they think up new ones. And look, they're smart. They know how to divide and conquer, or they wouldn't be in the position they're in.
Correct.
I mean, think about all the wealth that they've been able to extract from the working people of this country. I mean, stop and think about this for a minute. We have seen obscene corporate profits for years. We have seen CEO pay just skyrocket through the roof from, you know, 20 times the average worker's salary in the 1960s to, you know, over 300 times the average worker's salary today. And yet there hasn't been a revolution of people in the streets until now. These GM workers have finally said, enough, we're not taking it anymore.
Yeah, and I would add one additional point, and I think that's an important point. And when I was talking with the Canadians yesterday in Oshawa, so there is an international aspect to this. So in other words, being that the corporations are, you know, transnational, that they are in so many countries, that not only are they able to divide and conquer internally with all these tiers, but as a whole, they divide the U.S. working class and the U.S. GM workers from their very brothers and sisters who are striking, for example, at a GM plant in South Korea as we speak, or the GM workers that are fighting in Brazil against the GM corporation, or the brothers in Colombia, or, you know, in India even. So there's also we have to overcome this national division.
Right. No, you're right. It's something I've talked about before. You know, I don't have a problem with Chinese workers. I have a problem with the Chinese government. So when I talk about, you know, products made in China and these Chinese companies, I'm not talking about the workers who are being exploited and abused just like they're trying to do here. I'm talking about the companies. I think there has to be international solidarity of working people across the world, or we're going to continue to be divided as we are now.
Right. And they're always going to use the lower tier, whether it's here in the U.S.
Sure.
Or whether it's overseas, they're going to use that as a wedge or as a leverage against us from attaining a decent life and a decent standard of living. here in the U.S. Yeah.
No, I mean, the reality is, I've said for years, cheap labor and exploitable regulations, it's like heroin to CEOs.
Absolutely. I consider them an addicted class. It's all about being their addiction to wealth and power.
Yep.
And, you know, that's what their whole model is based on, is an addictive, you know, capitalist system. You know, that's what it is.
Yeah, hooray for me and the hell with everybody else. And let's go back to your trip in Canada, because I find it interesting that, you know, they've taken interest in this, because this is a plant, as you've said, that it was one of the five that were shuttered earlier in the year. And you said that they reacted a little differently than workers here in the U.S. did. How'd they react to the announcement of the closure?
Well, there's really several ways, and I think it's really exemplary, and it's very, very important to talk about. So when the closures first were announced, the workers at the Oshawa plant actually occupied their plant. They actually stopped work, and they just sat down. And they did it across at least two shifts. And this was at the GM assembly facility. But as I was mentioning earlier, there are other companies that are on the plant site, and then there's some that are not, but they're suppliers to the GM plant. And I heard from Lear workers, we met with some Lear workers in Oshawa, who actually walked off their jobs, and they did it multiple times. And the only reason they stopped is because the company got an injunction against the workers. And so, you know, but that was the kind of resistance that was being shown. And by and large, that resistance was shown by rank-and-file workers, not so much by their leadership. Their leadership was like following their leadership, their lead. But the actual actions were being taken by workers on the shop floor.
No, but isn't that how it usually is? I mean, isn't it the membership is usually the ones, and how it should be, that they're leading the direction, especially if you have a much more militant working class, which is why I've been saying for a while, at some point, you know, workers in this country will eventually find that they have power. They have the power to fold their arms and march in the streets, and that eventually we're going to see that, and we're going to see the days of, you know, numerous strikes and all kinds of stuff happening, because people are just, I think, tired of it.
So, well, certainly myself as a rank-and-file activist, you know, I certainly would concur with what you're saying, but I would point out that our union organization have this capacity to expand and you know, make our voices much louder, because we have organization, we have means, we have a media, we have all kinds of ways of broadcasting what our struggle is about, and that's what rank and file workers so desperately want from their leadership. So I just want to point out, when we were there, and this was a solidarity rally that the local 222 members were hosting for GM workers such as myself and my rank and file brother from Flint, the union leadership was not there. The local union leadership was not there. There was nobody there from the elected leadership of the local. It was just rank and file. And there's something wrong with that picture.
Yeah, but, you know, isn't that part of the argument that you've got, you know, going on right now, that the leadership is a little more conservative, and, you know, be it for whatever the reasons are, be it, you know, legal ramifications or having to deal with negotiating. Isn't that kind of the knock of what's going on today, that, you know, maybe the union leadership today isn't as aggressive or as forward-looking as they could be?
So yeah, I mean, I think that my approach has always been, you know, as a UAW member, as a UAW local officer in my locals, that we are part of the broader working class. And what we do, it doesn't just impact us. The contracts don't just impact our members. We impact the entire class. And therefore, the leadership, even though, you know, they're subject to being elected or unelected, you know, within their unions, but the leadership have to have the foresight to see that what we're doing as a union, as a UAW, has impact across the class, and we need to act accordingly. So I'm talking about a class struggle union. And that's what we so desperately need, so that when we're talking about a strike, that message goes out to the whole class, to the whole working class, about what we're doing and why we need their support.
No, and that's an excellent point. But it starts with one. I mean, it starts with your union right now. Do you think that the members who are out on the picket line right now Do you think that, you know, feeling this bit of militancy, do you think they follow that forward, or once they get what they get, you know, as we've seen in the past, you know, you're happy with it, back to business as usual?
So I think that I think the significance of this fight is the fact that GM workers have hit the streets, they've hit the gates, they're out there picketing, and I've seen expressions of solidarity that I haven't seen in a long time. And I think that if you feel it, if you're there, so for example, my plant, because we don't have any workers left that are GM workers, we now, you know, we've had Ford workers and we've had Chrysler workers that show up in our picket lines, and it is an expression of class militancy, and it's an expression of class solidarity. And these are the kinds of things that we should be cultivating, because long after this strike is over, the question is, what is going to be the direction of our union? What's going to be the direction of our labor movement? And I think that we really need to tap into the spirit that's being shown on the picket lines at GM.
No, I'm with you. And ultimately, you guys had a victory already in the fact that GM almost immediately cut off health care benefits, and the outcry and the spasm that the country had was so great that they turned around and said, no, we were kidding. We're gonna give it back. I mean, so I view that as a pretty significant win.
That was a very extraordinary moment, and I totally agree with you. I think that for this mega corporation to make the move to attack the healthcare of striking workers and to do it in such a brutal manner, I mean, there was no notice, no nothing, really, I think, boomeranged, and I think it really cost him. And I believe that not only was it a public outrage, but I think that the health insurers, I think they were alarmed at the idea that GM was creating a very convincing argument why employer-based healthcare is not such a good thing after all, because they can blackmail you and take it away from you.
But here's the thing, Frank. I've been saying this for years because, you know, basically the MO, of all corporations, is when workers go on strike, the first thing they do is cut off their health care. So to me, as someone who's known people and has gone on strike myself, this was not a surprise that GM would do this. It's just, I think it was a surprise to the workers, the UAW workers, that GM would go to this extreme measure, since they hadn't in the past and actually said they wouldn't. So for them, it was kind of a surprise. But for the rest of us, you know, this is what's happened. This is what corporations do. And it's always been one of my arguments about ending employer-based health care.
Indeed. Indeed. So let me tell you a little story, just going back to the thing about the tier structure, because I learned something new when I was up at in Oshawa. So just to show you to the depths to which this has gone, so GM, because it's so benign and so caring about its now laid-off workforce, will be sponsoring a job fair.
Okay.
And, you know, where other employers...
Don't tell me that they're offering them scab jobs in the U.S.
I'm going to tell you a different story. The story I'm going to tell you is that in order to be able to attend that job fair, you are going to have to show your GM ID. Meaning that all the workers that work for the other companies that are in that plant, that are represented by the same local union, are not qualified to go to the job fair because they're not a GM worker.
Oh, wow. Again, back to that divide and conquer thing.
Exactly.
Because I really thought you were going to say that, you know, they were going to offer them jobs at the places in the U.S. that are now on strike, and I would have said, no, that's a bridge too far.
Well, I wouldn't put it past them, right?
Did I just give them an idea?
No, I have a feeling that's in their playbook. And by the way, I should mention, you should understand that. So, for example, when I was at the picket line at the Poletown or the Detroit Hamtramck assembly plant, which is one of the other plants that's slated to foreclosure, there in fact are workers who, on a daily basis, are going into work. And I think this is really important to understand. They are approved to drive through the picket line by the UAW. And the reason is that they work not for General Motors. They work for the GM Subsystems LLC, and their contract is not expired. And if they respect the picket lines, they're afraid that they're going to be fired. and lose their jobs. So there actually are workers who are, you know, for the lack of another term, scabbing on the people that are on the picket lines, and it's unfortunately with UAW approval.
Yeah, but you know what? I have a little sympathy there. Are they doing the GM workers' work, or are they, you know, doing whatever job they were doing before?
We don't really know.
I guess that's the question, isn't it?
The picketers don't know. So they are doing. I mean, let's understand. The GM Subsystems LLC is doing work that used to be done by GM workers, right? That is the work that they're doing, but they're getting a lower rate of pay, lower benefits. And specifically, now you're asking the question, well, what work are they doing now? When I talked to the folks on the picket line, they said they really don't know whether they're doing some of the picketers' work in the plant or whether they're still doing the GM Subsystems LLC work.
Again, this is another one of those moments, years of bad deals, years of allowing these companies to slice and dice and subcontract and third-party logistics stuff. All of this stuff has created this kind of an environment that, again, has sliced and diced and pitted us against one another.
Yeah, and I personally believe that when a tentative agreement gets announced, there's no question in my mind that GM, and it's been talked about in these terms, that's a template for them going forward, and it's a template that they've introduced into like, for example, the Orion Township plant, based on a notion that they're going to use this new template to introduce, you know, electric vehicles. So they're using this excuse to say, well, we have to invest all this money in electric cars, therefore we need to pay you, the workers, less in terms of wages and benefits. In other words, the worker are going to subsidize this restructuring of GM by working for a wholly owned subsidiary of GM with lower wages and lower benefits. And that's going to be a template, I think, that's going to come across that bargaining table when we have a tentative agreement.
And it'll be interesting to see how the leadership of the UAW handles that.
Uh-huh.
And we'll see. I'm hopefully any day now something will be agreed to, hopefully sooner as opposed to later. But ultimately, from people I've talked to, they're willing to stay, you know, as the saying goes, one day longer.
Yes, indeed. I mean, there certainly was enthusiasm in the first couple of weeks of the strike. I mean, let's be for real. The workers are currently, getting a $250 strike check per week. The weather's changing and all that. So I think that the solidarity that's shown is great, but we need to up our game. And, workers from other unions, and this, we've seen that with the teachers and the nurses, postal workers. I mean, there are other workers that are coming forward. And I think that as we continue to do that in supporting of the GM workers, that they will be able to stay out one day longer and try to get a good agreement.
There you go. Frank, I appreciate the time as always. Thanks for keeping us up to date.
My pleasure, and I thank you very much for all of what you do.
I appreciate it. Our good friend Frank Hammer, retired UAW member, former UAW president. Good stuff. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.